roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. Ready to talk some mixed martial arts with you all for the next hour. Hopefully you're all doing good and had a good weekend. We sure did, hosting that watch-along, the UFC 262 watch-along. Again, thank you to everybody that hung out with us and watched the fights with us. It was a great night, historical night, because we crowned a new champion in the lightweight division. So we're going to talk about all that. We'll recap UFC 262 here for the next hour. Mike Bond, one of the top reporters, not only on our website, but in all of the sport, he'll join us in about 10 minutes. So we'll get the party started with him. But I do want to tell you about what else we'll talk about, you know, other than unpacking the card, UFC 262. Again, the lightweight division had a big spotlight on it. New champ, possible new contenders. And then we want to see what happens to all four fighters that fought on the card and what we might think might be next for them. Arguably, this is the marquee division still for the UFC, with Conor McGregor, an active fighter, fought already this year and fighting in a couple months. So I think I'd have to agree with that. So we'll unpack not only the event, but the lightweight division. Also, Francis Ngannou. All right, well, he's fighting Derek Lewis next. But is Jones going to fight the winner? And doesn't look like it. Stipe Miocic, it looks like he's going to fight the winner. So that's leaving John Morod in the cold. Remember, he gave up that UFC light heavyweight title to move up. Things haven't worked out because he's got a price. The UFC's got a price, and apparently just far apart because the UFC's moving in another direction. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Getting back to, you know, unpacking the lightweight division, Tony Ferguson, along with Jacare Souza, veterans of the sport who have done a lot in the sport. Both of them have worn major belts. We'll see what might be next for them. I think for some reason we're starting to talk about that a little bit more. Every single event seems to have a veteran. And we always have to talk about what might be next for them. Dana White can't stand the trailer people. Darius appears to be getting his Tesla soon. Lots to talk about here on MMA Junkie Radio here on a Monday, May 17th. So, UFC 262 took place this past Saturday night. Charles Oliveira defeated Michael Chandler. TKO punches, as exciting as you can get for a fight that lasted all of a round and 19 seconds. Shout out to both guys. That was really, really exciting. First round, the fight ended in the second. But Neil Dariush defeated Tony Ferguson. Decision win there, unanimous, 30-27 across the board. Rogério Montarin defeated Matt Schnell. This was fought at a catch weight, but I think we're going to count it as a fight for the flyweights. But the flyweight division, somebody's stock went up, someone's stock went down. Kaylin Chukagan defeated Vivian Araujo. Another decision. And by the way, these three decisions really took the life out of the pay-per-view for a while until the Oliveira-Chandler ending. So we'll talk about that. You know, we'll grade the event as well. Chukagan got her hand raised. So did Edson Barboza. Now his fight with Shane Burgos, that got the party started for the pay-per-view crowd. Great, great fight. They even got fight of the night. Andre Muniz defeated Jacare Souza. Mentioned that in the intro. Not only does Souza have to deal with this loss, the losing streak, but, oh, he got his arm snapped, folks. And how crazy does that sound for me to say Souza got submitted along the way and then got his arm broke? Yeah, amazing performance by Andre Muniz. Lando Venata defeated Mike Grundy. Split decision win right there. Guy always makes me sweat it. Jordan Wright defeated Jamie Pickett. Beverly Hills Ninja in the house. Andrea Lee defeated Antonina Shevchenko. So that was the other, the first of three women's flyweight bouts on the card. Priscilla Cachoeira defeated Gina Mazzani. Tucker Lutz defeated Kevin Aguilar and Christos Giorgos defeated Sean Soriano. It's great to say 4,110,000 was the gate. I just love saying now that there's a gate. It means there was people there, and there certainly was. 16,005 altogether. And the bonuses again, I already tipped my hand. Barbosa and Burgos, they got 75 G's. Oliveira and Giorgos, they got 75 G's. How about that? 75 G's courtesy of Tony Ferguson. All right, Goes, let's wait a little bit on the top of the bill, the lightweights. We'll talk all that when Mike Bond joins us. What impressed you about the prelims and some of the other fights that led to towards the big fights?
I had a little bit of a, I don't want to say a knot in my stomach, but anything that happens in Texas, when it comes to judging and commissions, things just don't normally work out. The undercard had a little bit of everything before the co-main and main event had like a little bit of everything, you know, decisions, finishes. But there were a couple scoring that we probably didn't agree with. Now, you and I alone on our broadcast, we didn't agree. But we would still have, like, the same winner. You know, the judges there, they do that weird thing where one judge says, I have this guy winning. And the other one says, I have this guy winning. But they have it, like, completely opposite, which – I don't know what we're going to do. I saw Eric Nixon kind of tweet something about that, and the judging is just – it kind of has this cycle where it's like referees, you know? It just goes up and down, and there was still a little bit of that, but the card was – overall, I gave it an A. I thought it was fun. I thought it was a great card. How about you?
Well, I know the fight you're talking about. It was Vanatta versus Grundy. It was the first one we had on the paper – on the watch-along. And you had 30-27 for Grundy. I had 30-27 for Vanatta. I think we both agreed that 29-28 was acceptable on either side. But I didn't think – I didn't think Grundy won one of the rounds. So when I heard 30-27, I go, okay, it's got to be Lando Vanatta. But, you know, that prior to that, we had, I think, four finishes of the first five fights. So it left the judges out of it. And we get to that fight, and it was like, is it going to be one of those nights? And then we had two finishes, to be fair. Muniz submitted Souza, broke his arm along the way, Barbosa and Burgos. No judges were needed there, although that one was going to be interesting, too, because we had a lot of volume versus damage, which I think is where a lot of this comes in. And then we had the three decisions in a row, Chikagian versus Araujo, Bontorin versus Schnell, Darius versus Ferguson. Which for me, it kind of like I go from an A to about a B plus, and I probably had it at around a B minus B until that great main event brought it up to a B plus. I don't know if I can give it an A minus. I think I need a solid co-main event and main event, and not that Darius didn't look impressive, because I mean that guy, you know, what he did to Tony Ferguson was very, very impressive, and it's definitely not the route I thought he was going to take. But anyway. I give it about a B plus. All right, we're lucky he's a little bit early. Mike Bond, one of the top reporters in the sport, is joining us. Been a colleague of ours for 10 years here on the site, and we'll chat about these big fights that took place at UFC 262. What up, Mike Bond? How you doing, my man?
What's up? Pretty good, man. Just, getting another week started here. Another double fight week we got coming, right?
And the NBA playoffs have started. I know you love you some NBA, too.
Yeah, man. That play-in game, circling the calendar Wednesday night, Warriors versus Lakers. That should be fun.
Who you got?
I'm scared.
I don't know, man. I think it's a tough one. I think Curry has been unbelievable this year. So, I don't know. I think he can... He's not a guy you want to have like a one game kind of do or die type scenario, right? That's like the one guy I would not want to be playing against. So I don't know. I'm leaning towards him, but if LeBron and AD are healthy, maybe it's a win for them. I don't know.
Arguably the player of the year, Steph Curry, man. Incredible what he did. He led the league in scoring. And yeah, when he gets hot, he can carry a team. So we'll see. Mike, what did you think of the fights? We purposely saved the co-main and the main. We wanted to unpack this lightweight division because a lot happened at 155 pounds. A lot has happened here in the last few months with the retirement of Habib, which was kind of seen as a, well, he's going to change his mind type of retirement. Then it finally became official. All the while, you got other guys trying to fight Habib or win to fight Habib. They didn't get their shot. So we finally were left with a vacant title, and it got filled by Charles Oliveira defeating Michael Chandler. What'd you think of the fight, and what'd you think of Oliveira's performance?
Man, what a fight. That was still buzzing from that one on the Monday morning, man. Like, that was just so crazy. I'm sure, you know, Michael Chandler's beating himself up pretty good, not finishing that fight in the first round, and he had Charles in trouble there for sure. I was worried it was going to be stopped there when Charles is kind of on his knees doing like the head moving, the bobbing, weaving type of thing. Fortunately, Dan Margliotta gave him plenty of leash and didn't jump in there early because we saw what happened. But man, like, just craziness all around. Like, Michael Chandler, I think, delivered what people thought he was going to deliver if he was going to win that fight. He just didn't get the actual stoppage. And then Charles Oliveira, I think, answered a lot of our questions, you know, about the resiliency and the durability, and, you know, if things get tough, is he going to quit, and all these different things. And you'd think if he was going to win that fight, it was going to be on the ground, and he almost did. But for him to come out in that second round and just starch Chandler like that, just, I don't know if you could write anything better. It was like one of the more memorable, I think, performances in recent memory, and just fights. And yeah, Charles Oliveira, a very rightful new UFC lightweight champion.
Goes, how about you? What were your thoughts on the main event?
I think Mike hit the nail on the head. I haven't heard a lot of people bring this up, but when he was on his knees, to me, that was the pivotal moment, because when he elected to go to his back, that saved him. Because I think maybe one, two more seconds of what was happening on his knees, that fight probably would have been stopped. And him going to his back, you know, even though Michael Chandler showed that he wasn't afraid to go into that world, he did hesitate for a second, I think. And that kind of bought Oliveira some time to just get things back and going. But had he not done that, I think that would have been a wrap. That would have been, Michael Chandler would have been your new champion. But that main event was just, it was sick, because they both had their moments. I feel like it's a fight we're going to see eventually. I don't know about 12 months, but I think we're going to see it again.
Yeah, you know, in that first round, I thought Chandler, you know, he goes for this guillotine, and we all know that Charlie Olives knows his way around the ground, you know. But that being said, who would have thought Souza gets submitted as well? You know, and that happened earlier in the night. But that fight's happening, and then all of a sudden you go from Chandler, you know, can he hit that guillotine? Maybe he's been working on it. He's guy's strong. Maybe he has a good squeeze. To now all of a sudden he's got his back taken with a body triangle. Still early in the fight, the bodies are dry, like the announcers like to say. They're not as sweaty or bloody or whatever. So maybe there can be more friction, more traction, you know. And then Chandler not only gets out of it, but he's on top. So, yeah, guys, there was so much going on. It reminded me of Kane and Brock Lesnar. You know, that fight, I think, ended in 4 minutes, but it was just like, you know, this big, massive train wreck, and you couldn't stop looking at, you know, everything that was taking place. But yeah, it went back and forth. I thought for a moment, something Mike Bond said too, the resilience. Charles Oliveira has almost had like two careers prior to this 8 or 9 fight win streak that he's on, where he's just been phenomenal. Now he's the champ. He did fight some big fights against big name fighters, and he would lose them a lot of time. He would get broken. And in this one, I thought that's what he was doing when he was starting to get on his knees. I go, uh-oh, that might be it. And now Chandler is going to just take it to him, you know, because Charlie Olives, as of late, he's always been in the lead. He's always been the pressure guy. And when he is, almost anybody's unstoppable, right? But, you know, now Chandler had gotten out of his hold, and now Chandler's, you know, wailing on him. And they go back to their corners, and Oliveira kind of had this walk like, whoa, fuck, you know, like, can I have 10 minutes, not just one? And, you know, Chandler's just sitting there going, all right, I'm ready to do this. And then all of a sudden, Oliveira gets shot out of a cannon and comes way past halfway, and they start, you know, throwing, and, you know, I think Chandler was tasting blood. He was ready to do something, and Charlie Olives hit a beautiful left hook, man, that's – I mean, it was just on the money, and that's what started it all, because Chandler's trying to get away, but he takes one to the temple. So much that happened here, but I got to give Oliveira respect, because I was one of those that said, this dude tends to break in fights, you know, if things don't go his way early on. And then I got to give credit for Chandler for getting out of the mess. Oh, I can't wait to see them fight again. But, yeah, I think 12 months is optimistic.
Yeah, it was just craziness all around. I mean, the fact if you're Michael Chandler, you're probably coming out of that first round just so happy with where you're at. I mean, I think these highest level lightweights are proving if it goes to the ground with Charles Oliveira, it's maybe not a wrap as quickly as we think it is. I mean, obviously Tony Ferguson showed like ridiculous durability surviving that armbar. I don't think many people would get through that, but he did. He didn't get submitted. Michael Chandler had some ground exchanges with him, didn't get submitted, but hey, you think you're through the fire? No, this man's going to come out and knock you out with the hands then. Like, he's just obviously a threat everywhere now. He's evolved into such an amazing, complete fighter. He can let the strikes go because he's willing to go to the ground with people. It's just, this is a very, very dangerous man in Charles Oliveira. So all the credit to him. Just, yeah, man. Like, I thought he was going to be in big, big trouble coming out of that first round. And then he just absolutely takes it to him in the second. A huge finish for him. Sets the record for most finishes in UFC history. You know, longest road to a UFC champion, 28 fights. Just all, you can dream up a better scenario for Charles Oliveira. Obviously, heartbreak for Michael Chandler. Maybe we do see this fight again. I'm sure we'll get into it. But I think Michael Chandler's path back to this opportunity is going to be a little bit tricky given the fights that could be ahead, the age he's at. And man, just this lightweight division is super, super deep. This is just the perfect timing for Michael Chandler. Everything seemed so storybook for him. And I don't know if it's going to, the stars are going to align this perfectly for him again.
But guys, he proved, right? He can hang with the best, which is something he used to say over at Bellator. His fans used to say, I think by now he's proved it. He knocked out Dan Hooker, one of the top UFC lightweights, and he was this close to winning a world title and competed against Charles Oliveira. So I think we can erase that. I think we'd all be in agreement there. 12 months might be much. I think 18 would be more appropriate. I'll tell you why, because in August of 2000, he's had like four camps and three fights within the last year. I'd like to see him really, really just decompress for 3 months, and then after that take a fight. He'll probably need two, in my opinion. But let me ask you, let me form the question this way. We know the winner of Poirier and McGregor is next for Charlie Olives. Who is in the next set? You know, who's in the next set of contenders, I guess, after these guys? And is one of those, can one of those be matched up with Michael Chandler to get Michael Chandler back to where he needs to be? Now, remember, Chandler fought Saturday. He fought in January. He did a camp for October and lost and made weight, but didn't fight in October. And I think he had the Benson fight in August, if I'm not mistaken. So I know a lot of you are going to maybe want to match up Gaethje, but I got a feeling Gaethje's like, dude, I want to fight now, where I don't think Chandler wants to. So think that through. But what are your thoughts? We'll start with you, Mike Bond. How do you see this division unfolding after Poirier and McGregor?
It's tricky because it's just all about the timing, right? Like, I think a lot of us feel, as you said, Gaethje and Chandler is the fight to make. But timing-wise, I don't know if it's perfect. Gaethje's already been sitting out for a while. I know he's training, waiting for a fight. Does he want to sit on the sidelines for five more months or whatever it may take for Chandler to get the rest he needs and then go through a training camp, all that stuff? So I don't know if that's going to work. And then you look at who else is out there, though, like, the only fight that really makes sense, I would imagine, other than that, would be Gaethje and Beneil Dariush, who, of course, got a huge win on this card, too. But they're with the same management. Beneil was saying at the press conference a story about how Justin Gaethje, you know, helped him get groceries when he was on, like, his losing skid and was doing all this stuff and helped him train. So, like, are those guys even going to want to fight unless, like, a title's on the line or something? Is that going to be a difficult one to book? So, to me, there's not, like, a very clear matchup. I mean, I guess you could do Chandler and Ferguson if you wanted to. They had the little conference moment, the whole Dana White privilege thing. But man, the way Ferguson's been looking lately, that almost feels, you know, cruel to a degree. I don't know. Considering how close Michael Chandler was to being the champion. So I don't know. I don't think there's like this super obvious matchmaking. I mean, the thing that obviously stands out on the winner's side is Oliveira against the winner of McGregor and Poirier. I know some people say McGregor doesn't deserve it because it'll be, you know, his only one lightweight win in like 5 years or something like that. But we know how the sport goes. We don't need to go into the reasons why Conor McGregor would get a quote unquote undeserved title shot. We all kind of know. And if he beats Dustin Poirier, it would be deserved. So I don't know. Maybe Chandler looks at the loser of that fight. There's been some, you know, Chandler McGregor talk over time, but again, it's all kind of just waiting and seeing things that happen as far as like the lay of the land, who's coming off wins, who's coming off losses, what makes sense. I don't think there's like a super clear matchmaking narrative or like ways to pair these guys up. I think it's gonna get a little tricky for Sean Shelby and Dana White.
How about you guys? How do you see this division going for these fighters that, that fought?
I think with Michael taking a little bit of time, going back with his family, I think he's going to realize that that's just way too optimistic what he's trying to do. So I think he's going to figure out that he does need to fight a little later. And I mean, the name that makes the most sense is Justin Gaethje, but it's just not really making much sense time-wise. So I think a fight that I would have done, or like a category where I feel like he drops down into a little bit, is the Kevin Lees of the world. But Kevin Lee doesn't want to fight at 155 anymore. The Gregor Gillespie's, something like that, I could see, maybe just to get his feet wet again. And then that performance that he had with Oliveira, I feel like he just needs a couple and he can maybe be right back in that mix. And plus those guys at the top are going to be picking each other off. So I could see him taking maybe one of those type of fights, but it's going to be really tricky. I mean, because it really just comes down to, it was perfect timing for Michael Chandler to get his shot, but now it's probably the worst timing afterwards, which is pretty unique.
Yeah, maybe like, looking at kind of the lay of the land who are overlooking here, Rafael Dos Anjos hasn't been mentioned. Yes. Maybe you do Gaethje and RDA, and then maybe Michael Chandler fights the winner of that or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I liked what you said about Chandler and Ferguson because they've kind of already had something. They were just on the same card, and they both probably used some time off. I'm not saying a whole year or nothing, but like, let's see them fight in 6 months. But I do like RDA versus Gaethje. Makachev already has a fight against Thiago Moises, and he's being pretty highly thought of as well. So we'll see, you know. And then you got other guys like, you know, Hooker, who's experienced a few losses. Aya Quinta's not fighting much lately. Paul Felder, I think, still wants to fight. I don't know. And they have name value, and they've been around for a while. And then, of course, Gregor Gillespie. So some of these vets are going to have to meet up with some of these guys that are just rising up. Now, where does that leave Dariush? You know, if he's not going to fight Gaethje, then yeah, then maybe he needs to get the winner of the Makachev fight versus Moises, if it's going to be Makachev especially. But I don't know. I think Dariush might feel like, hey, man, I'm kind of up there now. I don't know. It gets really, really tricky. So I think a lot of it ought to do with how healthy these guys are and the timing, you know. But we'll see. We'll see. I think whoever loses out of McGregor and Poirier, they're going to need a big fight as well. So, because the winner's going to go on to a title fight and the loser's still going to obviously want to lick their chops and keep fighting, I imagine. I don't know. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting scenario. We'll see. I don't know what's going to happen with the loser of that fight, depending on how it goes. But we'll see. Big stuff at lightweight. Either way, I think what we're saying here, all these names, you can't go wrong. They're just throw them in a hat, picks you out, you're going to be good to go.
It's back to being the marquee division, A, because Connor's active. And then there's just a lot of killers, right, guys?
Yeah. They're all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, I the heavyweights are coming strong a little bit. If they can get Jones back in the mix, and maybe that's my pivot to that. I know Mike's got to get going. He's also handling some stuff for us. But I think that's another big story. Not Mike. Not only is Lewis and Ngannou the fight now that's being made, but Miocic has his quarter up on the arcade game. He's got next. He's going off and getting his drink, and he's getting ready because he's going to get the winner of Lewis and Ngannou. What is going on with John Jones? Can we say at this point, is John Jones misplaying his hand, or is this all just talk, guys, and it will be John Jones that's next? What do you see? What do you see that's going on here? Let's start with you on this one, Go. Sorry, and then we'll go to Mike.
I think some kind of intervention has to happen because this is just not making sense. Like, if John Jones never fights again in the UFC, it's going to be a damn shame, okay? But the UFC will just keep chugging along. I'm going to tune in for Ngannou and Derek Lewis, and I'll tune in for a rematch with Stipe. You have my attention. It's just going to be a shame if John Jones doesn't fight again. But trust me, the UFC holds all the cards here. John Jones just played his hand terribly. I think he needs to – there needs to be some kind of intervention. Back in the day, it used to be kind of Lorenzo Fertitta that would handle these situations. Now he's gone. So somebody needs to step in and maybe talk a little bit of sense into Dana White, but a lot of sense into John Jones.
How about you, Mike?
Yeah, this is just such a unfortunate situation at this point. I mean, it's disappointing because for how long did the UFC always say, you know, we have the best fighters in the world and we give, you know, the fans the fight that they want. It's very clear that everyone wants John Jones and Francis Ngannou. Both the fighters want it. And Dana White's kind of willingness to be like, oh, well, you know, if John Jones doesn't want to fight or can't come to terms, like, we'll go to Derek Lewis. And then after that, we'll go to Stipe Miocic. And the train is just going to keep rolling. And, you know, we're not too worried about making this fight that everyone wants to see. That'll be one of the biggest fights in the history of the sport. And to me, if this doesn't get done, this goes on the list with, you know, GSP versus Anderson Silva, all those kind of fights that are like the biggest fights ever that the UFC didn't end up making. So it would just be such a shame. Like, I think obviously John Jones, as you guys said, hasn't played this perfectly. And he wants certain things that the UFC at this moment does not seem willing to give him. And that, as you said, they have all the power, they have the cards, they can just keep on trucking out heavyweight title fights and just keep the train rolling. And John Jones can sit there under contract, not able to go do other things or fight for other promotions or things like that. So he's kind of got his back up against the wall here. I hope in time that something will happen, that they strike the appropriate deal that works for everyone. I don't want to see John Jones come into this fight feeling like he's doing it for, you know, because he has to or anything like that. So it's just going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds. But yeah, that's kind of my biggest takeaway from what's going on right now, is that the UFC seems content, and Dana White, at least publicly, seems content not giving the MMA world a fight that we are very badly craving for, when he said for 20 years at this point that I always produce the fights that the fans want, and they're not doing it right now. So they need to get into a room. They need to figure it out. I get that Dana White doesn't want to cave to John Jones, who's been very public about this stuff, but there's got to be a middle ground that makes this work for everyone.
You guys just made me think of something. And if Jones wants to keep this public, I thought you guys hit on some good stuff. Goes said it would be a damn shame if John Jones didn't fight Ngannou, because that's something that's been talked about. The guy even relinquished his title. So I don't know if he can use the power of social media or tell his people to get him on ESPN. And then what you said, Mike, hey, maybe put Dana White, you know, into a corner. Aren't you the guy that makes the fights the fans want? Because fans love John Jones. You saw the pop that Tony Ferguson got. Regardless of the losses, regardless of where you sit or the trouble you make, once you make some of these fans, they're very, very loyal for you. So I wonder if that would work, or just getting a mediator. I apologize, Mike. I did want to ask you one more thing. You did a great job covering Triller. What were your thoughts on what Dana White was saying about Triller? Is it because De La Hoya is kind of in the mix, or is this Triller guy kind of a pain in the ass who doesn't maybe know what he's talking about when he's trying to cozy up to Dana White and figure things out? Because as you stated in talking about Jones, when the UFC has your contract, you can't really do much. Reports are out there that GSP wasn't allowed to fight De La Hoya or something like that in Triller. Was all that true, or can you tell us what you know about that?
Yeah, well, I do know that they had been talking to GSP, or at least reached out to his side about having him box Oscar De La Hoya, I think in like July or August, something like that, which is crazy to think about. And yeah, it's a shame that the UFC wouldn't let him do that. I mean, clearly George St. Pierre, who I believe turns 40 like tomorrow or something like that, sometime this week, he's not coming back to fight. Habib is gone. That was the only fight that was going to bring him back. So he's not fighting in the UFC. He's almost 4 years removed from the last time he fought in the UFC. Like, man, can if an opportunity like this comes up that I'm sure would make him a lot of money, like, you should let him do it. I think it's pretty disappointing that the UFC would kind of hold his contract over his head and not allow him to take this opportunity, regardless of Dana White's personal feelings towards Triller or Oscar De La Hoya or anything like that. It's an amazing opportunity for George St. Pierre. And maybe George St. Pierre at his age could maybe beat Oscar De La Hoya at this stage of his career. You never know, right? Like, I think that would be kind of interesting. As far as like the Triller UFC dynamic with Dana White, I know that, I mean, they lent out Ben Askren to go fight over there. Like, he was under contract. So why? Because they thought he was going to beat Jake Paul or whatever the case may be. Like, it's not like they haven't done this before. So obviously GSP, a bigger star, stuff like that. I'm obviously not privy to the exact conversations or the text messages that was reached out or anything like that, but being around those people at Triller for the time I did covering that event, I could see how maybe their approach could rub Dana White the wrong way. That's not surprising to me. So to hear Dana kind of go on that classic rant at the press conference, very in character for him. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure it bothers Dana at least to a degree that this company is coming in and eating up some of the combat sports, you know, narrative, even though it's not MMA. But obviously Jake Paul's doing his thing and they're putting on some noteworthy events, whether you like the approach they're taking or not. So they're kind of disrupting the space a little bit. And I could see how Dana doesn't want to, you know, give any of his assets or help a lending hand to build that company up further than what it is. So the whole thing is just, I think, developing. I think we'll probably hear more from the Triller side in the coming days, and I'm sure Dana will continue to be asked about it. But right now, the GSP thing does seem like it, at least it did have legs to it. It's seemingly dead now if the UFC vetoed it. But yeah, I mean, my biggest takeaway from that is just unfortunate for George St. Pierre, because that seemed like it could have been a very lucrative opportunity and something I'm sure the martial arts mind of George St. Pierre challenged that he truly would have embraced.
I mean, he let Anderson Silva go, you know, and he's not going to go out there and box. So I would have thought by now GSP was somewhat free and clear, but I guess he's not. All right, Mike, thanks for joining us here on Junkie Radio on a Monday. Great stuff as always. Hope to have you back on soon.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, we'll see you. All right, folks. He's one of the best in the biz. Go to at Mike Bond MMA. Follow him on Twitter. Goes, you know, I was telling you this on Saturday. It kind of sucks because Dana White, okay, maybe he doesn't believe they got a million pay-per-views. I don't know. Does that mean they got 900 grand or 750 grand? But there was a big pop to the night that Jake Paul fought Ben Askren. And you know, maybe they overinflated their numbers or they didn't, I don't know, but Ben Askren and Frank Mir went out of their way to say, hey, we made some good money. So I was happy for them. I thought Mir did a good job competing against Steve Cunningham, a former IBF, cruiserweight champ. And then Ben Askren, you know, obviously it didn't go his way, but he went out there, got a good paycheck, and that's that. I mean, he knows, it's not like I'm busting his balls. He knows it. His hands were never his forte in MMA. It was always his wrestling, you know, and he had a great MMA career and an awesome wrestling career. So I think he has nothing to be ashamed about. But when Dana White was going on his rant, he was saying, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit? He boxes the MMA media into a position where, like, well, we don't want to argue with you because we're really here to discuss 262. And we just want your reaction off of some of the big news. You know, GSP's still big news. Triller's still big news. At least it was. But you can't say who gives a shit because a lot of people gave a shit. I mean, just on our side alone, I can't imagine all the other sites that maybe are hybrid boxing and MMA or just boxing or just entertainment. People gave a shit. You know, that thing was clicking. So I think he has to find another way of combating that and figuring out maybe, again, is Zuffa Boxing the home of these types of fights? Dana White knows a lot of celebrities, a lot of former athletes that might just want to get their taste. Maybe go, you know, straight up against them. I don't know.
I'm in a weird situation because I don't know if I'm a who gives a shit guy. If that fight never happens, I'm not going to lose sleep. But if it does happen, yeah. But if it does happen, I would pay for it. That piques my interest. So I don't know what that makes me, if that makes me weird or what. But if it didn't happen, I wouldn't care. But if it did happen, I would definitely pay to see that. Oscar De La Hoya was a great boxer. And GSP was one of the greatest of all time in mixed martial arts. So, yeah, to say nobody really cares, I don't know that that's the case. But I understand where his issues come. A, he cannot stand Oscar De La Hoya. He probably doesn't want to put any money in his pocket. And B, you're risking a guy that's going to be going down into your Hall of Fame as one of the greatest of all time. You might get him to look almost like an amateur against a pro boxer. That's not going to be a good look for UFC fighters. Because remember, casual fans, they just walk in and they just say, oh, it's a UFC guy against a boxing guy. And then that's the outcome, right? So that probably doesn't look too well for the UFC, I think. And I kind of get that.
That's what I think is bugging Dana White, is that maybe this paints MMA and, of course, for him, the UFC into a bad spot, where former UFC fighters or MMA fighters are going in there and just getting lit up. Mm-hmm. I think the hardcores know the difference. But, yeah, the casuals, it might hurt his brand, his overall brand. Who knows? But GSP's about to be 40, retired. I think Oscar's about my age, so let's put him at 50, definitely retired. Definitely not a healthy Oscar De La Hoya. But I do want to ask you this. You would tune in to Oscar versus GSP. Here's your $49.99, which is what they charged last time, because they're probably going to have some more quirky fights. Snoop's going to get high. Al Bernstein's going to hold things together. Pete Davidson's going to pimp out his mom. The Black Keys are back. Because of what you think they're going to throw at you as entertainment on a Saturday night, or just for that one fight by itself?
Just the fight. And everything else is gravy on top of that. You know, you throw in a Paul brother or something like that.
I need something. Yeah, I need more than just that, I think. I think I might tune in and go, God, this is awful, you know, because who knows how good Oscar will still be. And I just don't hold any hope that GSP could take him out.
I don't want to miss out. I think that's what Triller does a great job of, is I don't want to be the guy on Twitter that night that has no idea why these jokes are being thrown out or why people are saying that. I don't want to be left out. That's part of why I would order it. I think if GSP really needs to look and see, when you say lucrative, how lucrative can this be for him? Because if it's that big, because remember, if he came back and fought for the UFC, he would get a big paycheck. So something like this would have to be pretty massive, like a pretty big paycheck. And at that point, man, if he was willing to come back and test himself against Khabib, shit, man, I think if I'm GSP and this is a fight that you just really want, I might dangle out the carrot of, I'll come back and fight Kamaru if you let me fight Oscar after, something like that. I don't know. That might be my way if I was managing.
I don't think Dana would trust him, because he was supposed to defend the title if he got the shot at middleweight, and he never did.
Well, all he has to do is fight that fight. So, I mean, he could even do it first, really, if he wanted to.
First Kamaru and then the boxing?
I'll fight Kamaru if you let me fight, if you let me do the boxing. I mean, those are two massive paychecks to end your career.
Yeah.
I don't know. If it's really that big, that's what I would offer if I'm GSP.
That kills. Right now, GSP can hold on to being the greatest welterweight ever, maybe even the GOAT of MMA. But that really kills him a little bit. Granted, we'll give him a little bit of a pass because he's 40 if he fights Kamaru. But I think Kamaru still needs more title defenses to eclipse GSP. But once you get a head-to-head over someone who's obviously not in their prime, I don't know. I think if I'm GSP, I stay away from MMA. At least with Khabib, there was a little bit more of a size difference. Here, he was going to come in as a welterweight fighting a bigger welterweight, whereas the other one, he was going to come in as a welterweight fighting a big lightweight, but still not bigger than him, you know? Mm-hmm. And someone who probably isn't as dangerous with the hands as Kamaru is. No disrespect to Khabib. I know he put McGregor down, but still, like, overall, what we've seen out of Khabib, you know, it striking is not his forte. But anyway, I was just thinking, I wonder if Triller could get cute and just go, we'll pay John Jones. I wonder if they have so much money they can say, we'll pay John Jones salary to fight Ngannou. There, done, you know? But that's GSP versus Oscar. Oh, man, that would piss off Dana so much.
I don't know if they'd have that kind of money yet. I mean, honestly, I think
we'll pay it and make the fight happen. Give the fans what they want, you know? Put Triller on the canvas.
Number one on that list is, I think Dana just does not want to put any money in that organization's pockets, let alone for De La Hoya. I think that's just number one right there, and I don't think that's going to change. But, you know, we were talking about John Jones as well, and somebody does need to step in, a mediator of sorts. And, dude, I don't know why. I have the most ridiculous person of all time to do it, but I actually think this person might be able to get it done. And I think Daniel Cormier is a guy that has been in that situation before, fighting for big fights most of his career. He's kind of a UFC guy in the sense that, you know, now he's doing the broadcast and all that, so he's kind of a company guy. But at the same time, he has some fighter genes and he understands that side. I know he's a bitter rival of John Jones, but I've always been of the impression when we talked to Daniel Cormier that he could put that aside. I really do think so. I think he might be a guy that could maybe fix that situation. Sitting down with both of them and just keeping it real on both sides. If John Jones would allow something like that, that would be the guy that I would pick to fix the situation. And I know it sounds ridiculous because that's John Jones' biggest rival of all time. But I honestly think he has that character and just the brains on both sides of things to maybe get that done.
Well, time to waste him. He hasn't fought since the Reyes fight, and that was February of 2020. So even if we were to say sign on the dotted line, by the time he fights, it'll be a year and a half. I think he's still 33 or 34, so he has time. But he's also a fighter who has a lot of wear and tear. But, you know, he's also had these long breaks due to his own buffoonery, the suspensions from the commissions. So maybe he has had time to just nick some of these injuries that can add up over time. But I don't know, man. I just thought this would be tremendous for the UFC and for John Jones, because John Jones is arguably the GOAT for many. But once you get that second title, oh, man, now you can really, really – all those guys that have second titles that are, you know, in these types of conversations, they have to go by the wayside because John Jones has never lost. I mean, now you get back to Khabib being your only opponent in GOAT talk, you know. But I don't know, man. That was a clear message that Miocic is next. If he says that Ngannou versus Lewis is in August and Miocic gets the winner in, we'll say, December, by the time John Jones fight, which would be like maybe March of 2022, if he got the winner of the Miocic versus the winner of Ngannou and Lewis, you're looking at a two-year layoff, which it worked for Ortega. It worked for GSP. It's worked for some fighters. Cruz came back from a long layoff, you know, but I still feel like there's some of those years where you could have made some money, added to the legacy. Maybe he could have kept doing his thing at light heavyweight while all this got negotiated. I think by leaving one belt for the other, I don't know. That move seems to have backfired.
They're saying in the chat, what if he just talked DC fighting John Jones eventually, but at heavyweight? That would be pretty funny to see all that unravel again. You know, if Miocic beats Lewis, or sorry, if Ngannou beats Lewis and then beats Miocic again, dude, just for shits and giggles, if I was Cormier, I would probably just throw out that quote of, I know you guys think there's nobody left, but I would definitely come out of retirement to face Francis Ngannou. Oh, John Jones, yeah. But Jones is in a bad situation.
He beats Lewis. He's only 1-1 against Lewis. So if it's a classic, they can still run a trilogy. The first one certainly wasn't a classic, by the way. And then with Miocic, they would be settling a trilogy if they ever fought. So I think that would be the last that we would see of Ngannou versus Miocic. But it's not like Miocic is out of line. A, he's the greatest heavyweight ever. And B, they're 1-1. So Miocic is in no way out of line by going, well, what about me? You know, it looked like what Dana White wanted to do was say, all right, Jones, the ship sailed on you versus Ngannou, but you can fight Miocic to solidify your spot so that you can get the winner of Lewis versus Ngannou. That would have been nice. If he takes the L against Miocic, oh, man, all right, the experiment at heavyweight went bad. I'll go back down to 205 and let me see what I can add to there. He's still involved in GOTOK because GSP had losses. Anderson Silva had losses. Jose Aldo. Habib's the only one who didn't have losses, but Habib also doesn't have the title defenses. Even Demetrius Johnson has losses, you know. Henry Cejudo has losses. So only your only guy in that chat, in that kind of conversation, would be Khabib, who never lost. But again, I think he only got the 3 title defenses. So who knows, man? But yeah, it's pretty interesting. Again, I'm not a big thriller fan, but I can appreciate the buttons they're pushing because it got people to talk about it, to watch it. You know, it still clicks. So
they got to figure their thing out.
People give a shit about it. What?
Triller's got to figure out their thing as well. Like the last card, there was too much shit going on. There was just way too much shit going on. They need to dial that down a little bit, that broadcast. When they got up to like six people on the broadcast, that was chaos. They really need to go through that with a fine comb and just say, hey, what worked and what didn't, and get rid of some of that too as well. Because I don't know, that was cute one time, but I don't know if I want to sit through something like that a second time.
So you would trim down the roster on the announcers for sure. What about the vignettes? Were you cool with slapping and Ric Flair's arrival and
the slapping? I'll give you that. I mean, all right, keep maybe one of those. Not so many bands and you got to get rid of at least half of those, I think.
Just and one then, band.
No, they had the Black Keys. They had Justin Bieber.
That's what I'm saying. They just have one band. If they're going to do a band, just have one band.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, something like that. Yeah, Pete Davidson's got to go, or anybody with that type of attitude. And then, yeah, just maybe even – I think Snoop has, like, a stake in the company, but Snoop was a little bit much on that broadcast. That they got to do something about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I think they got a show coming up in June. All right. What else are we going to talk about here? We went through the card. We talked about the main and the co-main. We kind of tried to slot a little bit of options for each fighter. If you missed it, we said, obviously, Poirier versus McGregor gets Oliveira next. Chandler, he's had four fight camps and four weight cuts, but only three fights in the last, 9 months. So a little bit of time off. And honestly, we're mid-May. Spend the summer with your family in Nashville. You know, before the little kid has to go back to school, little Hap. And then in September, start a camp, you know, because he moves away to Florida from his family. So I think that would be a good rest period for him. And then in September, he could start a camp and fight like sometime in November. I know the UFC likes to go to New York in November. They have big shows in December. Maybe he can be a part of something like that, then come back and fight in March or April. That would be the 12-month mark. I just don't think that would get him the title shot, because of the depth of 155 pounds. Because remember, Makhachev fights in July, I believe. And he looked pretty flawless the other day. McGregor and Poirier, the winner is in. The loser still has high value. Gaethje's always going to be a contender because his only recent loss is Khabib, who's retired. So you got to give him some respect, but you also got to give him a fight. Who it'll be, I don't know. RDA is a former champion, and he did pretty well for himself as a welterweight. I mean, he started off well, and then he finished with a couple L's, but still, as a lightweight, you know, he got to be a world champ. So if he goes out there and gets another win, then he might be in a nice little spot as well. I don't know. I think Gregor Gillespie still needs to fight a little bit more. He looked pretty impressive the other night, but still. And then you got the other guys that have been fighting for a while, like Iaquinta and Felder, I guess, who if they still want to continue fighting, okay, but throw your name in the hat because this thing needs to get going. We'll see where Dariush can sneak in right there. He just had a daughter. You see he got a response from the Tesla people?
Yeah, right away, right? Said it's on the way or something like that.
Said it's on the way, and hopefully they threw in some bells and whistles. What would be nice if they said, hey, thanks for all the free publicity. Don't worry about the price of the car, but I doubt that's going to happen. All Benny was saying was just send me the car. You know, I ordered it in December. You said March. It still hasn't shown. What the fuck? You know, like seriously. So I think they'll probably upgrade it and give them some nice bells and whistles. So that's pretty cool.
I'm a little dumb when it comes to cars, but Tesla is just what? All electric?
Yes. And one thing he said was, you guys pride yourself on the safety. My wife is pregnant. I have a kid that's coming. That's what he said. That's what he was thinking when he bought it in December. And so now, as you can tell by the embedded, she's ready to have this kid. And it was supposed to arrive in March. Now we're in mid-May and still nothing. Plus, I don't think he was getting responses or something. So we'll see. But it caught a lot of traction, and it's been doing pretty well on social media and on our site. And Elon Musk is, I think, the second richest man in the world, and pretty popular because he's been on Rogan's podcast a lot. So a lot of people dig the fella. But anyway, getting back to UFC 262, Bontorin versus Schnell. I thought Schnell really missed an opportunity there to take that next step into being an actual contender for the Moreno Figueiredo winner. I'm not saying he would have been next, but still, I think this would have been a big win for him. Remember, the guy who was supposed to originally fight Alex Perez, he just fought for the title, so he was really getting close. Kaylin Chookagian, another decision win for her. She's like a gatekeeper. You know, you want to get to Valentina, you got to get through her, and Araujo messed her chance because I thought Araujo was looking good early on, but then faded. Barbosa, man, that guy, he never ages. I mean, he still kicks like a mule. He'll still spin kick you. He'll leg kick you. He'll head kick you. You know, he's got some nice hands. I think for a while there, people were saying he was chinny, but that's not – I mean, Burgos hit him with some good shots. That's what kept Burgos in the game, was he was hitting the heavy, heavy artillery, and he was eating them shots. But the ending goes because Barbosa hit him with a nice 1-2, and Burgos was kind of like, I'm still here. And he even bobbed and weaved, like, I'm still here. Let's go again. And then all of a sudden he was like, oh. It was like 3 second delay, which is a long time in combat sports, where all of a sudden he just started falling back, and then he slammed back into the padding on the octagon, and then Barbosa threw a couple licks in there. I was scared because of that delay. We've never really seen that in the UFC like that. We see it with a liver shot, where the fighter will get hit, and then all of a sudden, oh, they make the face. You know, it takes more like maybe a second. But in this case, this guy got hit, and he was still smiling, still ready to go. And then all of a sudden, when he went to step, the legs just weren't there, and he started to fall back. And I thought, oh, shit. That scared me a little bit. They said, you know, they took him to the hospital, and he says he's all right, so we'll see.
I heard a doctor talk about it a little bit and break it down. Basically, he was just saying that it's actually a little bit more common than we know in other sports, like football was an example. But a lot of it has to do with just your adrenaline that's running through your body, you know, and your will going forward. But yeah, that was pretty scary. You know, the thing, Edson Barbosa, he does kick like a mule, but I couldn't believe how many shots it took. Like, usually, I think we talked to Gilbert Melendez one time, and I thought he said by like the second one, he was already like, this is a problem. This is something that I just can't take any more of these. And he must have lit him up at least 12 times in round one or something like that. Like, I've never seen anybody take that many kicks from Edson Barbosa.
Yeah, he didn't show the slightest discomfort at all. You know, a couple times he didn't really check him. So he didn't turn his leg to check him. He was just starting to lift his leg so that he wouldn't receive impact. But a lot of them he took, and a lot of them looked like they landed solidly in the calf, some a little bit above the knee. Of course, you always think, ooh, what if he gets that nerve? You know, could he shut him down? But Burgos just kept eating those, eating punches. And I thought for a second there, man, I thought maybe the fight was going to turn. But Barbosa's really, really addressed cardio. For a guy that's now dropping to 145, who used to come in chiseled at 55, he's still hydrated enough, you know, for his brain to take those shots. I mean, I thought he really, really proved a lot there, Edson Barbosa. I can't wait to see what's next for him. He was always a contender at 55, but now at 45, he's going to get a big fight.
I think, you know,
even bigger fights.
I think the worry, if you're the UFC, is when you give a little bit of an older athlete a lot of money, how long are they going to be able to maintain what they've been doing? And I thought Edson Barbosa, off of getting the money that he wanted, did exactly what you would want as an organization. He came in, he was not just him, but I mean, even more, you know, he had such a crazy volume. His cardio was there. Everything was just on point. I thought that's probably a good feeling for the UFC. Like, I think they probably look at each other and go, hey, we made the right move here.
Who had Souza losing by sub? Who had Muniz by sub? That had to pay astronomical odds. Probably along the lines of, remember when Fluffy beat Vieira? That was a pretty big one, too. And broke his arm, too. He broke it above the elbow. Oliveira's arm was transported to the hospital. I think he was having a surgery. Says he's in good spirits. But with his age and now this injury, I don't know, man. I don't know if he'll be back in the UFC.
I think really when you look at the card overall, like when we were breaking down Chandler and Oliveira, I think we all said there are multiple ways that this could go down. But honestly, maybe Chandler by KO early, or Oliveira by submission early. Not a lot of people had Oliveira winning by TKO. So fighters are just getting better at everything. They really are. And I know this card had a few submissions. We haven't been really seeing like a whole lot of arm bars or triangles anymore because fighters have just gotten so good at defending those type of things. But in this particular case, jiu-jitsu made a little bit of a comeback, I think, on this card. But Jacare getting submitted is just a big deal. But let alone a break like that, I just never thought I'd see the day that something like that would happen.
Do you think Tony Ferguson's goose is cooked? Because I don't. I know he's lost three in a row, but he's lost to the current He's lost to the current champion. We haven't updated our rankings. That comes out Wednesday, I believe. So our current rankings have Gaethje at 2, Oliveira at 3. Oliveira's obviously going to move up. But he's lost to 2, 3, and I thought there was one other. Oh, and 14. So Dariush is going to move up too. Before that, I think he won 12 straight, and he was 14-1. I still think he has life within the division. Maybe against someone who's experienced some losses, like Hooker maybe. Quintus coming off a loss. But it's not going to be a top five guy. He's now going to have to accept 10 through 15 or maybe 8 to 12, somewhere in that range, someone who has a name. And we'll see. The fans still love him. He was stealing the show out there in Houston. Him and Chandler were. What we have to accept, though, is Ferguson as a title contender. I think that is done.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the key that you hit on is that the fans love him. And that's kind of one of the biggest recipes. If you look at some of these guys that have just had a ton of fights in mixed martial arts, like look at guys like Joe Lozon or Jim Miller. Like, what do they have in common? The fans love to see them fight. I think as long as you're that interesting, you add in a little bit of a personality that Tony Ferguson definitely has, there's reasons to keep you around. But you can only do that so long. Like, you do have to win. So I think whoever the UFC matches up Tony Ferguson with next has got to be something favorable to Tony Ferguson. But that's just tough to do in that division. That's really, really tough to do because everybody's a killer. And I don't know that Tony's going to really want a name lower in the ranking. So that's something that's going to be an interesting conversation that I think the UFC is going to have with him. But I still want to see him fight. If the question is, do you think he's going to fight for a title anytime soon? No. But can he be relevant and be interesting? Yeah.
It reminds me of the fall from grace that BJ Penn had, where he was just like prelim guy at one point. Remember? Mm-hmm. He was like really early in the prelims, and it was like, you know, and they make good money, which is, these are the fights that a lot of these fighters, you know, when they make a career out of it, when they're fighting for 3,000, you know, on a smaller promotion, one day they want to cash six figures. After that, they want to get to, you know, the 1 million mark in just total purses, you know. And then after a while, they have that one fight where they either fight for a title or they get the win, the bonus, and their show. And now it's like half a mil in one shot. And, you know, that's big money. That's life-changing money. For a lot of people, that's when you can start to feel good about your kid's college fund or a mortgage or tax debt. I don't know, whatever you have that can really, really hold you back and give you breathing room. So that's why I hope that the UFC realizes they still have, I think, some value there with him. He just can't co-headline anymore, I doubt. He'll just have to accept that it'll have to be someone lower in the rankings. He might have to take a pay cut a little bit. I don't know. I don't want him to. I mean, you know, hopefully if they keep him, they'll honor the contract. But I'd like to see him still around. And I'm not trying to shove Jacare out the door. It's just he's, I think, either 40 or closer to 40. In fact, I'll look it up real quick right here. I can just click a button. By the way, can you hear the
Yeah, what the hell is all that?
Okay, well, I don't have somebody attacking me with a chainsaw, luckily. Oh, yeah, look, this guy's 41 already. You know, Jacare, and he just kind of moves around a little slower, and now he's got a big injury to come back from. So that one's tough, man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. All right, folks, listen, we got to start wrapping up here. The gardeners, in the next house making a little too much ruckus. Sorry about that. Thanks again to all of you that tuned in on Saturday for our watch along on MMA Junkie. And for the people that went over to Sportscaster and kind of had to circle around to find us, Sportscaster is still involved in these watch alongs. They're known as Panda now. So we're powered by Panda. The watch alongs are powered by Panda. They're on MMA Junkie. They're great guys. But yeah, basically going forward, you'll see us here on the Junkie website now. And I want to thank all of you that showed up. And, you know, if you see something like that, too, pass the word, you know, the retweets of the actual link, because I know some people, again, were going to Sportscaster. And remember last week, we kind of didn't have any answers because we didn't. But what we found out later in the week was now it's all on MMA Junkie. The watch-alongs are on MMA Junkie. They're just powered by our good friends over at Panda. We got to meet one of them. Shout out to Pete from the Panda team. Solid cat. And thank you all for your support. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We're going to talk to Edson Barbosa, Julie Kedzie from Invicta. So we'll be talking to both of them this week, a few others as well. And we'll be back on Thursday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, for another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. Again, big thanks to Mike Bond for chilling with us and unpacking that lightweight division and some of the big stories from this past weekend. All right, folks, we're out of here. Enjoy your day. Go out there and be a champion.